Hey everyone, JJ Cooper, Carlos Colosso, Baseball America Draft Podcast. And if you have been here, you notice, hey, wait, what a second. This is not Carlos hosting. We've got a kind of a little bit of a new format. I know that Carlos and I did the podcast last week, but I'm very excited to be a regular part of it going forward. And more importantly, flipping it where I'll host because I want to hear, I think you all want to hear more what Carlos has to say than anyone. Carlos is, for us, the one who's been covering the draft the longest, I shouldn't say the longest. I guess technically I was covering it before you, but
yeah,
has been covering it the most and covering it for quite a while, and obviously is the one who is most devoted to it, as you all know. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of flipping the format here a little bit. We're looking forward to it, and we're diving right in because Carlos just got back from yet another, I would say, very productive weekend. Texas has been very good for you so far, hasn't it, Carlos?
Yeah, it has. With the exception of every time I travel to Texas and come back, I'm kicking some sort of cold or travel bug. So apologies if my voice is not at 100% today. But in terms of the players that I've been able to see with these Texas runs, it's been tremendous. I think week three was maybe even more impressive than week one, just in terms of the quality of the players I got to see. It really feels like between those two trips, though, I've seen half the first round at this point, which is a pretty impressive thing to say. On Thursday, I basically hopped off the airplane and drove straight to a high school game. And then after that game, I went to another high school game. And then I did two more after that. And it was all day chasing down high school players. And that is a sort of run that is just not super common for me to make. It is very common for area scouts and scouts on the ground to do that, but it was just a lot of fun to basically follow around a scout crowd. I mean, I had my guys down that I wanted to see, but I definitely pivoted some after hearing like, oh, you got to go see this person. So it was just a blast to do that. And then obviously sitting on Globe Life for the rest of the weekend for Rock Chalowski, Will Gasparino, we'll get into all that. But yeah, I had a blast, JJ.
But you
and I'm also very happy about the podcast. Let me just comment quickly on this. For those who have been listening to the podcast, the draft podcast specifically for the last few years, it's been it was kind of a me and Peter show. And I think as just the veteran BA podcaster, I kind of naturally took over the hosting responsibilities. But it will be fun to kind of have you shepherd the show. And I think we're going to have a lot of really fun conversations. So it won't be anything drastically different for those who've been listening. I think if you liked the show previously, we're still really excited to talk draft every week. So looking forward to it.
The biggest change you may notice is I'm planning to put this episode up on YouTube now every week and kind of share some of the video that Carlos is getting on these trips and all that as well. Stats for players, you know, little graphics and all that. So if you have been listening on the podcast and you do like, if you're like me and you like listening to podcasts on TV, you know, whether during the day when you're working or whether it's at night as you're falling asleep, stuff like that, you're now going to have the YouTube option as well as the plan. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But I wanted to say that you said, like, you know, you don't often get to do that. You don't often, like, yes, that is the area scout life, is bouncing from game to game and figuring out how to arrange it. But I would say that your Thursday was a little bit more normally when you're doing that. And when an area scout is doing that, they're going to see guys who are targets, who may be a guy who, is this guy going to be on, you know, someone we need to keep paying attention to or not?
Right.
You are getting a little bit more star-studded version of that,
for sure, like,
than the normal Thursday.
For sure. Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm in a bit of like a cross-checker role when I go out to things during the spring. Like, there are clear targets I have. The area scouts are, I mean, there are a lot of area scouts at all these games I'm going to, but for area scouts, you also have to work really deep down your pref list. You'll be seeing guys who are not going to be considered in the first 10 rounds, and that's really valuable. But for me, again, it was like very prominent players who we have ranked highly on our board. And it's just fun. I think a lot of the events I do are, hey, there's this showcase, there's this tournament, you're at one field, you're kind of sitting here all day, players are coming through. It's very efficient, it's very valuable. But there just was something a little exciting about traveling around the Dallas area and watching like high school games. And it also is different too. When you're watching high school players, it is so much more focused. It's rare. We do not have a Corona High every year where they're just players and players you can watch on a high school team. With these, it's like you're watching one specific player. So you're very focused during their at-bats or when they're on the mound. And then when they're in the field, you're kind of just watching them to see if they get any opportunities. It's a very different way of watching a game. it's refreshing to do. And again, it's enjoyable when work is going and watching really good baseball players. So let's get into some of those.
So speaking of, we're going to start it off with, I would say, the player who has probably done more in the first few, and we are played 12 games as we're recording this, but UCLA's Will Gasparino already has, he has 12 games. He has 10 homers. You got to see him this weekend. Mm-hmm. You've been talking to, scouts, cross checkers, front office officials. We've got a mock coming. So you're trying to get kind of a sense of where everything is. I want to kind of ask with that, like, okay, I'll lay the land out and then kind of hand it over to you, which is, I would say that Gasparino came into this season viewed more skeptically than positively. 2 years at Texas, never hit close to 300. And as the study we did last year kind of spells out, basically you got to hit 300 in college. Going back to 1981, there are very few players who have been drafted in the first round who don't hit 300 in their draft year. That was something Gasparino had never done. It was more kind of a 250 hitter, 300 on base his first year, 339 the second. It doesn't matter how much power you have. You got to show some consistency of contact to be a real, top of the draft contender. Here we are, 390, 528, 1220 so far. You got to see it, 10 homers already. But I want to kind of ask, like, how important is this? Because the other thing that lays out here is, I would say that there probably hasn't been any teams that's had more scouting heat on them, I would guess, in the first 3 weeks than UCLA, just because of the quality of competition they've faced so far. Mm-hmm. These big, like you said, this, big tournaments. But on top of that, the schedule's actually, I would say, like, for a lot of guys, the schedule could get a lot tougher. I would say that the quality of competition, you can't say with Gasparino that he's feasting on bad competition so far. This is not that they're playing teams who have mm-hmm. no hope of going to the NCAA, being in the field of 64.
Yeah, I mean, UCLA, in terms of our top 25 teams, I believe they're the maybe one of two teams that has played six games against top 25 opponents. They had a series with TCU week two. That was quality competition. This week three tournament, they're playing good teams every single day. So I do think it is really important for Will that he has been able to do this damage against big teams, because I think it makes you take his changes a little bit more seriously. If he was doing this against a bad competition, against just really weak non-conference competition the first few weeks, like some teams really do just have lighter schedules than UCLA. If he was doing this against those teams, I think it would be a lot easier for evaluators to maybe shake it off and not take it as seriously. And because he's done it against legitimately quality competition, I wrote about this on the site this week. There's a whole section where I kind of get into Will Gasparino's profile and his changes. So I'd encourage everyone to read that. It's a pretty deep notebook that I have from this trip. So,
read that.
Yeah. The kind of sense I have of Will Gasparino right now is he's making everyone in the industry very nervous. And what I mean by that is I'm trying to get a grasp of where to place him on our board. Currently, we're constantly tweaking how we rank players. Like, Will Gasparino is not on our top 200 right now. And that is not because we were unaware of who Will Gasparino was. He was a top 100 prospect in coming out of high school. Like, his tools and upside potential has always been really exciting. He's a player who's grown up around the game. His father, Billy Gasparino, formerly the scouting director with the Dodgers, currently a VP with that organization. Like, he's been a very prominent name for a while. But kind of like you said at the beginning, he just really struggled his first 2 years at Texas in the hitting department. He came into this spring with a real skepticism about just the quality of the hitter he was, both in terms of making consistent contact and also with his swing decisions. I mean, as a freshman in 2024, he played 59 games. He had a 32.9% strikeout rate and just a 4.8% walk rate. To his credit, in 2025, he improved those numbers, but it was still a 25.6% strikeout rate, which is very solidly in the skeptical, like, can you really hit territory? And so far this year, there are real improvements. There are meaningful changes that he's made to his swing. Like you said, he's leading the country with 10 home runs in just 11 games, which is absurd. He's only 3 home runs off his single season career best line from a year ago, which he did in 58 games. So feels pretty comfortable that he's going to shatter that record.
Might top that this year, I would hope. Top that this week, you know, by the time we get, you know, if he keeps it up.
Right. So. He's homering basically once a game. He's the most exciting number eight hitter in the country, probably. It's worth pointing out, like, this is a guy hitting eighth in a lineup, which is just an incredible luxury for UCLA to have.
The old high school thing where you put your best hitter eight because then you think that they won't pitch around him because they don't have any scouting.
I do think, like, if things are going well, don't really change it. It's kind of a great addition to have this kind of game-changing power in the eight hole. It really lengthens the lineup in a dangerous way. But in terms of draft stock, I think, yes, very good that he's doing this now. I also think, just given his track record and given the uncertainty that the industry seems to be having right now, and exactly, like, is this a hot streak? Is this a real change? What are we going to... Basically, everyone I've talked to is like, yeah, I feel very light on his hit tool right now. I'm scared I'm going to be really wrong on his hit tool evaluation. I need to see him more to try and create some confidence in, like, what I'm actually going to upgrade that to. And I think for him, it is going to be important for him to continue to maintain this improvement the entire year. If he kind of falls off and regresses and is more back to the 2024, 2025 version of Gasparino, I think it'll be very easy for a lot of teams to kind of chalk this up to just a hot stretch. Like, he is a player who has the sort of power and tools where when things are going right, he can just go on these surges. But just how real the offensive setup changes, the approach changes, will be extremely important for his draft stock. I think right now I had a conversation with a scout today, just talking about some of the top players in the class. Gasparino's name came up, and he said, hey, I think this is going to probably be one of the more polarizing players in the entire class, because it's first round tools. It is not a first round track record in terms of hitting performance, and, like, where we wind up with that evaluation, how close everyone gets to a consensus on Gasparino is going to be intriguing to follow.
So I actually would say, I think that there is a player that is going to hurt Billy Gasparino's draft stock, which is Hunter Bishop, because
you mean Will.
Well,
although, yes, Billy,
Billy's busy scouting. Will Gasparino, that thing will hurt Will Gasparino's draft stock, which is Hunter Bishop, right? Kind of had this year in 2019, right? Like, Hunter Bishop was a tooled up guy at Arizona State, but his first 2 years, he had five home runs each of his first 2 years, never hit 300, had concerns about his contact ability. The tools were always loud, but never had kind of fully put it together.
Right.
And then Hunter Bishop went out and in 2019 kind of had this kind of start to the season. Like, he was sitting, you know, again, he never hit more than five homers. If you look at that season, like, you get to mid-March and he already was at, like, 50, you know, like 12, 14, 15 homers. And after that, it did kind of tail off some, but he did have that year where he hit 342, 479, 748 overall that year, went very high in the draft. And then in pro ball, the hit tool questions very quickly, he had injuries as well, but they kind of very quickly arose again, and it never kind of came together. It's never kind of come together for him. I'm not saying that that's going to drag Gasparino down, but I do think there's a lot of people who will be scouting Gasparino who will remember that story and be like, okay, you know, and again, like, what I remember from that year is, was like the comparison of Cameron Meisner and Hunter Bishop, because Meisner was like the guy who really didn't have the year. It was kind of very much like, okay, which one of these guys, the guy who kind of had the track record coming in or the guy who had the great draft year.
Right.
Ended up, like, Meisner's actually, I would say, like, neither of them have been, you know, home run draft picks, but I would say Meisner has ended up being the more productive big, right, you know, pro. He's made it to the majors and all. But I do wonder how much, like you said, there's that kind of like, okay, we've known about this guy for a very long time. He's on this great heater. I do think, like you said, there's probably is a little bit of this natural, like, I want to see him do it for a couple more months,
right.
Before I'm going to feel comfortable with it.
The player I thought of too in regards to Gasparino, and maybe this is just because I did a study on strikeout rates of first round college hitters in the bonus bowl era, and that's Vance Honeycutt. I mean, very different players in terms of their size and kind of levers at the plate, but I think they have similar pros in terms of they're very athletic and toolsy with upside, and they have very similar cons in the sense of, like, we have a lot of uncertainty about the quality of the pure hit tool. But in that study, I basically looked at all of the first round hitters out of 4-year universities, first 30 picks, I guess, to be specific, because first round picks can be a little bit more variable than the first 30.
Yeah, but it's like setting it at 30 because we don't have to worry
about it. Yeah, it's just a lot more straightforward. But at the time I did that study, there were 106 hitters drafted out of 4-year universities in the first 30 picks, bonus pool era to now, so 2012 to it would have been the 2024 draft. And there were only 13 players in that span that had a career strikeout rate in college north of 20%. North of 20% feels low for players like Gasparino and Vance Honeycutt. But here are some of the other players that fell into that bucket. It was Vance Honeycutt, Kyler Murray, Hunter Bishop, Bryce Matthews, Reggie Crawford, Spencer Jones, Jaron Kendall, Michael Toglia, Jordan Westberg, Trevor Larnach, Joey Bart, Matt McClain, Logan Davidson, Brock Wilkins. So it's like not a group.
Westberg's there.
There are some hits here.
But who else?
Jury is still out. Like, will Spencer Jones make the adjustments? Those are the questions we've had for Spencer Jones. And I honestly think a Spencer Jones comparison is not a terrible one with Will Gasparino. It's left-handed hitter versus right-handed hitter, but they are both like freakishly tall, freakishly athletic for their size with, I mean, Spencer Jones has 80 grade raw power. Will Gasparino, I'm sure some people are putting 80 grade raw power. He has at least 70 grade raw power. I mean, I saw him miss hit foul balls to the opposite field that went like almost 400 feet down the line, and it was just jarring to see. So he is in this bucket of like extreme risk, extreme reward profile, and I can imagine the industry is going to have a whole host of different placements for where he's at on their boards because of that.
Okay, because I will note, you said the key thing here is we can't ignore, like you brought up Spencer Jones, which made me go to someone else here, which is, you said top 30, your study was top 30 picks. There was a certain very tall outfielder with some strikeout concerns taken at pick 31. So, you know, if you went to pick 31, Aaron Judge, you know, I mean, again, it is worth noting that Aaron Judge never hit more than 12 homers at Fresno State.
Like, what a bum.
You know, and basically kind of faced some of these contact questions. Like, this is not saying that Gasparino's Aaron Judge, but when you
I think that is like, when you point to Aaron Judge, it's like, this is the sort of upside you dream about. Like, this is why you take the risk, because they're like Connor Griffin from a few years ago. Like, everyone was aware that there was really exciting pure upside. You just had to take on a certain amount of hit risk to acquire that upside. And now the Pirates are the beneficiaries of that. It seems like it's going to pay off really well for them. So a lot of these guys are just going to fail, is ultimately what teams are going to have to grapple with. It's hard to know ahead of time who's the player who's actually going to pan out, but it is game-changing power. It is above average or plus speed for a guy who's 6'7", maybe 6'8" at some point in the future. It's a good arm. He's playing center field now. Like, if he moves to a corner, he's probably a plus defender, or at least has a chance to be a plus defender. So I don't know. He's probably going to terrify every team in the industry, but there's no denying like the upside ability he has to offer. And I'm still torn on what I think of him, because I went into this series really being down on Gasparino's approach and just contact. And then first game, he had this really ugly miss on a breaking ball. I was like, Gasparino, like, there's just too much swing and miss here. The approach. But then I kept watching him more and more, and he kept hitting balls. And I feel like day two in particular, all his at-bats were just rock solid. And the way he's able to backspin a baseball to the right center gap, it is elite carry and power. I have no concerns at all that it's going to transfer to a wood bat. So he's terrifying, but also super exciting. I mean, where are you at on him, JJ?
What you said. Like, this is what I do think. You come to a point in the first round where if he keeps this up in any sort of way, you have to consider it, because what you just said, like, I think this is going to be a theme of this year. It's like, we have to offer the reminder in any draft, even in the first round, half the guys are going to either fail or be like very modest impact. Right.
Yeah.
And again, like when you take someone like David Dahl, Albert Elmore, I was just looking at 2012 draft, and they give you like 2-4, that's a useful pick, but that's also, you get to a point in the back of the first round or even a little bit earlier that where you're like, okay, this guy is either going to fail or be like an all-star, and this guy could be fine. You might start in being, okay, we're trying to win championships here. When you talk about like a guy who's as tall as well, it's understandable.
Yep.
Like that this is going to take longer. This is
I was talking to one scout who basically wondered, because of his length, just the inherent length that is in the swing with a player of this height, like if he is just always going to be susceptible to velocity in on the hands and softs up away. Like that's typically the book on those profiles. And I think that's going to be the game plan for how teams are going to attack him at the next level when pitchers are more equipped to do that regularly. So, but like you said, it is always a kind of a question of risk versus reward, where that becomes like a worthwhile risk to take. And I do think maybe the one thing that could limit how high Will goes in this class is the fact that this class is just really good. It really feels like there are 10 to 15 players who are locked into the top of the first round, barring injuries. And even with some injuries, like with Cameron Flukey, still feels like he's going to go in that range as long as he comes back and everything looks good. A lot of that is just coming down to like the medicals, but there are a lot of premium offensive profiles in college at better defensive positions. And I got a chance to compare and contrast two of the very best this week as well. That was, I feel like, very useful to see.
I'm hosting, but you're now segueing perfectly, even though I'm hosting, which is it is a perfect segue, because the other thing that does stand out from what you got to see is comparing and contrasting, I would say, the two top shortstop candidates on the college side in this draft class. And we're going to get into that right after this quick break. So, Carlos. Okay, we got to talk about Rock Chulowski. I think we'll probably talk about Rock Chulowski at some point in almost every draft podcast.
Maybe non-White Sox fans will get mad at us for talking about him so much because they don't have any chance. But
but I would say the more important thing that you got to see this weekend is you also got to see Alabama's Justin LeBron, who I would say we just laid it out with Gasparino, that Will Gasparino has so much to prove this year, but also could do more to help his draft stock. As you said, he's not even a top 200 guy coming into the year. I will say that when we update it the next time, I feel very comfortable that will change.
I think he might crack that list.
I think he might move in. We update throughout the season, and this will change. But Justin LeBron came into this year as one of the top players in this draft class.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, if the Rock Chulowski error bars would say that like his range was from like 1 to 3, you know, like as far as pure talent, like not bonus demands, all that, but like a bad Rock Chulowski season was not going to see him slide very far. He was not going to, that first call of, hey, we're interested in taking you, would not last very long. I feel like Justin LeBron is a guy, if we say Rock's 1 right now and he's the clear 1, the bars, even right now, as we talk about this 3 weeks going into week 4 of the season, we're still talking about a guy whose range goes anywhere from the very top of the draft to sliding, I would say, reasonably significantly in the first round, depending on the contact rate, the, you know, the hit tool questions and all that kind of have surrounded him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, and even more so than Will Gasparino, what Justin LeBron does in conference play is really going to dictate where his draft stock winds up this year. Because the biggest question with LeBron was, I mean, a year ago, it did feel like Justin LeBron was having a sort of Will Gasparino start to the season. I think he was maybe one of the most impressive hitters in the non-conference slate of college baseball in 2025. And then we got into conference play and the bottom kind of fell out for him. You talked about Will Gasparino hitting 248, 252 in his career in his first two seasons with a scary strikeout rate. Well, in conference play in 2025, Justin LeBron hit 252 with a 31.9% strikeout rate. Those are alarming numbers. Those are numbers that he's going to have to improve this year. And if he does not improve in those areas, it feels very unlikely that there is going to be a Rock Chulowski versus Justin LeBron conversation. Now, I will say, so far this season, Justin LeBron seems to be trending in the right direction. Again, so much of this you could just wash away and say, okay, shut up until you do it in conference play, we'll see. But he's striking out 13.2% of the time through 14 games so far. He's walking at a 17.6% clip. If those numbers are maintained, they will represent career best for him in his college career. And I do think ultimately with Justin LeBron, his package of tools and profile is the most competitive with Rock Chulowski in this draft class. I think he has similar upside and a similar, no doubt, sort of shortstop profile. And we talked about Grady Emerson a few weeks ago on this podcast, but the tool set and the just dynamism of the upside potential with LeBron, I think, is in a different tier from Grady Emerson. It is always weird to compare and contrast Grady with LeBron because typically you invert those high school and college profiles, but I do think that's the case. What stood out to me when watching Rock versus Justin LeBron, I think if you're in like the pro Justin LeBron camp, and to be very clear, I have talked with scouts who are more excited about Justin LeBron than Rock Chulowski. Now, maybe they would temper that excitement with some of the natural risks there, and I don't think anyone is saying Rock is not still in that 1-1 category of his own pretty handily, but he is maybe a full grade better of a runner than Rock Chulowski. There is a lean sort of wiry physicality that is a bit different than Rock. Rock is more solid and thick and sturdy. And I think Justin LeBron is always going to maybe offer some more value on the bases. I mean, he's been a very efficient base stealer his college career. Looking at the numbers now, he's 36 for 37. He already has 12 bags in 2026. I don't think Rock is ever going to be that sort of runner. Rock is maybe a solid average runner. Maybe he'll turn in some above average times, but Justin LeBron accelerates rapidly. He is this bouncy, buttery, smooth mover in the field. Watching him do an in and out at like 50% speed was a thing of beauty to see. And I think that the differences between LeBron's game and Rock's are a little bit more hit risk, obviously. And then I even think with the security of Justin LeBron's hands, the reliability of his glove at the position, I think Rock is just a little bit more advanced right now. I saw Rock make every play he had an opportunity to make this weekend, and he made it with shocking ease, like just eating up 110 mile per hour ground balls, short hops, positioning his feet incredibly well around challenging plays, like knowing when and how to use his arm. Both of these guys have plus arms, but
that,
like
playing the hole that you shared that, you know, that we'll put up on the YouTube while you're watching this. Like you could say like, okay, that wasn't a cannon arm, like where he threw on the fly, but it was absolutely using every bit of awareness as a shortstop.
I would say this is
your environment.
If you guys ever wonder like, well, what does internal clock mean with a shortstop? Like this play is Gavin Grahovic. He hits a ball into the hole. Rock Chulowski ranges over, takes a backhand, very quickly turns and gets rid of the ball. He could have taken a little bit longer to load up, get his feet set. He gets rid of the ball quickly, and he's intentionally throwing it low on a skip, and it's accurate. And I just think that awareness and that that like baseball intelligence that Rock has is more advanced than anyone in this class. And with Justin LeBron, I think I saw like some of the highs and some of the lows of him defensively. Like he has great range. I saw him range up the middle, have a forehand. He kind of botched a forehand play that he should have made. And I think he will make those more in the future as he gets more reps. And then there's another play where he ranges across the second base bag in a shifted position, tracks back, throws across the second base bag with his body moving to third, and throws a dart to first base for double play. He looked really good coming in and making a slow roller. So like, I have no doubts that Justin LeBron can become a plus defender. I just think Rock Chulowski is a plus defender right now. And I think those are some of the differences between these two that maybe will make the gap between them decisive if they're not closed up more. That's kind of how I would frame it. That makes sense.
I'll just note with that, I'm not a giant errors are that important for a young shortstop. Like there's so many shortstops who have errors at a young age. And then there's a part of me that almost is like errors for a young shortstop, especially if it's because of errors of aggression, they'll learn to not do that. But I would rather see that than the guy who just can't even make that play. But I will note with LeBron, we are very early in the season. He already has 6 errors. It's a 9.13 fielding percentage. He had 9 errors last year. He is going to almost assuredly blow well past that this year, considering how many errors he already has this year. Mm-hmm. It'll be something where, again, a lot of what you talked about, there will be probably some diving deep into kind of just the hands and the reliability. Because, again, if you're drafting at the top of the draft, you have to get forensic on this stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to be over analyzing things and trying to figure out, okay, why are these things happening? Is there something here that is temporary or long term? You know, all these kind of things. But it is worth noting that 913 fielding percentage right now is easily the worst he's ever had. You know, it is 2 years before this. As a freshman, he had 11 errors, you know, and he's already at 6 right now. That's something to watch. Doesn't mean that he can't play defense, you know, or anything like that. But it does mean,
which, to be clear, I do think he can, and I think he will be a very good defender. It's just the current reliability. I think you have to go to Rock, and that's probably the case for Rock compared to basically any shortstop in this class, but that is just kind of a difference. I think, like, macro view, the way I'd frame it is, like, Justin LeBron has tremendously exciting upside. It might require a few more reps to get to that polish that Rock just has now. And so, like, if you want to say, oh, let's dream on the athlete, let's dream on what he can be in a few years, like, you could make a really compelling case for Justin LeBron. And I came away from my look really being excited about him. I mean, the way he's able to lose a ball to the pull side, there is an ease to his game that I think the elite players typically have. Like, everything he does on the field looks easy. I saw him strike out. I saw him get hit by a pitch. I saw him fly out. But the home runs that he hits, I don't know how to describe it really. He's not the most physical player in the world. He's listed 6'2", 175 pounds, something like that. I think he's probably a little bit heavier than that. But when he makes contact, it really doesn't look like the ball should go as far as it does. But I think he just has such tremendous bat speed. I don't know. He's just a very fun player. And I think he would probably be my favorite at this stage to overtake Grady Emerson as the number two player in the class. I could easily see that happening if he does continue to show some swing refinements and contact improvements in conference play. But again, just to maybe emphasize here at the end of this conversation, Justin LeBron in conference play is going to dictate so much about his draft stock. And everyone is basically just waiting to see, okay, what do you look like as a hitter when conference play comes around?
That's the one thing, the last thing I want to kind of touch on. This, like, when we're comparing and contrasting, we just talked about Rock. We're also talking about Gasparino earlier. Look at UCLA versus Alabama. Look at LeBron versus Chulowski. Chulowski, as he goes into conference play, that's not going to be that the competition ramps up. If you look at the schedule that's kind of coming up, I mean, this is the thing about being in the Big Ten as opposed to Ohio State, Rutgers, Minnesota, like, Michigan State's on the schedule coming up. Like, they have conference weekends that are not going to be, oh, this is the must see to see, like, what, you know, the best of Rock. Whereas with Alabama, it's going to be something where I feel like that there's much more of Justin LeBron's season to be written than there is with Chulowski, just from the standpoint of, okay, let's see who's got Alabama got this weekend. Okay, giddy up. This right. is going to be fun to watch and yeah. see, as you said, he had the season kind of going like this last year at this time. And then how he performs in conference is probably going to be as important for him as about anyone they can think of in that top tier of the draft class, just because that's the question that he faces.
100%. You know?
But so we've talked a lot. You saw, like you said, you saw a lot of college guys, but you also did see high school guys on this trip too. Mm-hmm. And is Cooper Harris kind of the takeaway, your big takeaway on the high school side for this trip, or what, you know, why should people be paying attention to him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Cooper Harris, I wrote this, he's not exactly a pop-up player. He's a player we saw over the summer. I think he's mostly just a player that we currently have underranked based on what I saw from him in person and just the general conversations around the field about Cooper Harris. He's a right-handed pitcher out of Texas, committed to Texas. I got to see both him and Trey Rangel, who is also a Texas-based Texas commit in the area, on the same day. And Cooper Harris's start was more impressive. Trey Rangel is a guy we have inside the top 50. I think he's probably sitting in the second, third round range at this stage. But Cooper Harris is a player I would expect to jump right into top 100 consideration for us on our next update. I've heard as much from scouts when soliciting feedback. Again, I thought he looked like that sort of player when I saw him. He had one of the more impressive starts that you'll see from a high school player. He struck out 17 batters in 6 innings. He struck out 12 of the first batters he faced. He had 2 non-strikeout outs in this game. They were both ground outs. And for a while, it was looking like he was going to throw a no-hitter with just nothing but strikeouts. The one batter who actually got on base against him reached on a dropped third strike on a strikeout. So no one really did anything. He was sitting 90-95. The fastball control I thought was good. He's got 2 distinct breaking balls, a slider and a curveball that look good. He's flashed a changeup in the past. But yeah, he just looks like another solid addition to this really deep high school pitching class. I think I mentioned it on one of our early season podcasts, maybe one of our top 200 drop, but there were a number of high school pitchers who I couldn't find room for in the top 200 that I was still really excited about. Cooper Harris would be in that bucket as well. And now, like, he's just done too much to warrant him being excluded. And I think maybe in hindsight, I would have liked to have him on prior to the season. But again, this is kind of why we continue to take stabs at it, because we're not perfect. I'm not perfect, but we will be very transparent about kind of our process and how it works. And very transparent about the fact that we're constantly just trying to solicit information and get these guys lined up. But I think right now he looks like a no doubt top three rounds talent for me. And he's also, if you're a Texas fan, I think both Harris and Rangel feel like they're in this range where if they got to campus, it wouldn't be shocking, because there is a lot of competition in this high school pitching group, and not all of these guys are going to get paid the money they are worth.
And not only that, but obviously the dynamic has very much changed nowadays, where you aren't talking about your choices are either getting paid or not getting paid. Your choices are getting paid as going to minor league baseball and then major league baseball, or get paid to be a, you know, potentially an ace in college. And right. So it changes that dynamic a little bit. So
right.
Now I want to say, like you said, you want to be transparent about it, but also this is part of the history. We both have kind of dove deep into Texas in the draft over years. And I feel like that there's one of these guys every, like you said, Harris is not the true pop-up where this isn't a guy who is like, who is this? Who's now all of a sudden on the radar. But there's a lot of guys where I would say that we've seen this over the years. Grayson Rodriguez is one that stands out, where it's like, wasn't that people didn't know about Grayson Rodriguez before his senior year, but Grayson Rodriguez found another gear his senior year.
Right.
If you go way back, Noah Syndergaard found another gear. There does seem to be kind of this history of the Texas high school pitcher who is reasonably well regarded and then comes out for a senior year and you're like, oh, there's right. something more here than there was before.
Yeah, I wouldn't liken it exactly to the Grayson Rodriguez situation, because I do think there was a significant jump in stuff that maybe Cooper Harris is kind of just doing more of the same. Like we wrote about Cooper Harris as a standout at the area code game. So maybe it's just like, hey, you should have had him on here earlier. Or maybe it's a case of like, hey, there's so many good high school pitchers, like sorting through them is just difficult to do. Maybe it's both of that. But yeah, there are always...
So
I guess I'm waiting for like who's going to be the first legitimate high school pop-up player. I don't know that we've had that so far, but at some point I'm sure that's going to happen.
So, okay. I do want to ask, digging deeper on that though, like you said, we wrote about him in area codes and all this. If you said the stuff's not dramatically different, what was better about him now? Why is he more effective now? Why is he kind of like, oh,
well, again, I think part of it is like, we probably just had him placed too light.
Right.
Like, I mean, I would say in contrast to Trey Rangel, maybe what is a separator or potentially a separator for those two is just the command that he showed, the fastball control. Again, these are high school zones, so there are a lot of calls that he's getting that he's not going to get at the next level. But I felt the consistency of his location with his entire mix was pretty impressive, where Trey Rangel has shown maybe a bigger gear of velocity in the past and maybe has a better breaking ball outright than Cooper Harris. But I think after watching them both on the same day, I came away more confident that Cooper Harris has a really good chance to profile as a starter. And I do think there are going to be some continued starter reliever questions for Trey Rangel that he's going to need to answer, at least moving forward this spring, he'll need to answer, or if he gets to college, he'll need to answer then. So that's maybe the differentiator for me when looking at those two specifically. But I think they both belong in a similar tier on the draft board. And if there are more people in Texas who prefer Cooper Harris moving forward, that wouldn't be shocking to me. But they're both really talented pitchers. So it's fun to see them both.
So that is kind of our look at Carlos's trip to Texas.
A lot more. I think there are like 20 more people that I wrote up. So there's lots of detail. We got video. We've got notes on a whole slew of players. And I also have an underclass notebook that I need to get cranking on today too. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, that should be out as well.
A lot of stuff on the draft side, as we will be doing, all getting you ready for the draft. We hope that you enjoyed this latest edition of the Baseball America Draft Podcast. Do check out baseballamerica.com. So much over there. But also check out the other podcast on the podcast feed. We want to give you something to listen to pretty much now. One day, you know, every day when you get up, you should have another BA in weekdays. You should have another BA podcast in your feed. We're covering college. We cover the draft. We cover prospects. going to be covering the WBC, spring breakouts, everything, spring training, all that. And again, check out baseballamerica.com and check out the Baseball America YouTube page, because if you like this, there's a lot more over there that you will like as well. And we will keep that rolling all the way, getting you ready for the draft as well. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.